Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 6, Prahlad instructs his demoniac schoolmates. Text number 3. Sukham ad aindriya kam daitya deha yogena dehinam saratra labhyate daiva yatha dukham ajatnataha sukham happiness aindriya kam with reference to the material senses daitya oh my dear friends born in demoniac families deha yogena because of possessing a particular type of material body. Dehinam, of all embodied living entities. Saratra, everywhere, in any form of life. Labhyate, is obtainable. Daivat, by a superior arrangement. Yata, just as. Dukam, unhappiness. Adyatnataha, without endeavor. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the material body, to the sense objects, by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life, according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. Purport. In the material world, any form of life, there is some so-called happiness and some so-called distress. No one advises distress in order to suffer. But still it comes. Similarly, even if we do not endeavor to obtain the advantages of material happiness, we shall obtain them automatically. This happiness and distress are obtainable in any form of life without endeavor. There is no need to waste time and energy fighting against distress or working very hard for happiness. Our only business in the human form of life should be to revive our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become qualified to return home back to Godhead. Material happiness and distress come as soon as we accept a material body, regardless of what form. We cannot avoid such happiness and distress under any circumstances. The best use of human life, therefore, lies in reviving our relationship with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Sukham andriya kam daitya deha yogena dehinam saratra labhyate daivad yata dukham ayatnataha. Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life, according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. There's a history in the Gaudiya Math where there was once a householder. He was fabulously rich. And all the disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada kept on trying to encourage Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada to tell him to give up his opulence and try to become more renounced so he could become more Krishna conscious. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada was reluctant to do so, but since his disciples kept on bothering him like that, so he said, all right, he told his disciple, you must give up all your material assets and move into the forest. So he surrendered all his lakhs and lakhs of possessions, his house and everything, and he went to the forest to live. So while he was in the forest, one king came by and saw this renunciate living in the forest and became attracted to him and said, "Since you're so renounced, I'll bestow upon you a great fortune." So he wound up fabulously rich again. So if we're meant to be poor, it doesn't matter what we do, we're going to wind up being poor. And if we're meant to be rich, it doesn't matter what we do, we're going to wind up being rich. So either one of them is not the best, to be attached to being rich or to be attached to being poor. The history of Sudama Brahman was that Sudama was fabulously poor. He didn't have even enough money to feed his wife or himself. And his body was very frail and always shaking due to lack of food. He didn't have proper clothing. And his wife was worried. So she said, "Sudama, that Brahman, you're a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is living in Dwarka. You should go there. And I'm sure he'll bestow upon you at least what you need to live properly." Sudama said, "Sure, I'll go someday. Just keep on reminding me. I'll put it in my agenda." So after being bothered by his wife many, many times, he said, "All right, I'll go to Dwarka." Because he was thinking, at least I can go and see my dear friend Krishna. Krishna was his childhood boyfriend in the Gurukul. He was a guru. They're both guru coolies. Guru coolies, they stick together, you know. Even when they're 50 years old, they're still guru coolies. So Sudama said, "Yes, I'll go and see Krishna in Dwarka." And he said, "But I have to bring him some offering." But they had nothing in the house. So his wife went and begged some chipped rice. Has anyone ever had chipped rice? No. You had chipped rice. Yeah, it's simple rice. Nothing fancy about chipped rice. You just soak in the water and you eat it. So his wife got him some chipped rice. Now, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's being fed by unlimited goddesses of fortune every day. What to speak of his mothers. In Goloka Vrindavan, they're spending practically half the day cooking for him. If you ever read the list of preparations that Krishna eats every day, you'd be quite surprised. You'd understand just by the amount of preparations he eats, he must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because no one could survive eating so much prasadam. And so he went there, and he hid the chipped rice underneath his arm, or in a place where it wouldn't be visible. And there he met with Krishna, and they were talking about the childhood pastimes that they had. Krishna was very happy to see him. Well, first of all, Krishna was happy to see him. He ran and embraced him. He brought him into the palace in Dwarka, Rukmini's palace. And there he put him on his Rukmini's bed, washed his feet. Rukmini offered aarti to the Brahmin, and everyone was quite surprised because the Brahmin didn't seem very opulent. He didn't have proper clothing on. He looked a little dirty, because when you go to Dwarka from wherever he was living, it's not like an overnight train ride. He had to walk there. The airplanes weren't working at that time. Nor were the trains, because there are no airplanes or trains, no buses or cars or rickshaws. So he walked there, so he was a little dirty. He was very frail. He practically didn't eat anything on the way. And everyone was quite surprised. Krishna embraced this poor Brahmin. Why is he embracing him? He only embraces Rukmini and Balaram. He doesn't embrace anyone else. And they talked about their childhood pastimes. And the next day, well, Krishna asked the Brahmin, did you bring me anything? So the Brahmin said, well, not really. Because he was embarrassed to give Krishna, the goddess of the husband of the goddess of fortune, some paltry rice. So Krishna said, well, look at there, I can see you have a little bit, you have some stash there, you're keeping it all for yourself. So he grabbed it and started to eat it. And he was about to take a second morsel, and Rukmini grabbed his hand and said, no, Lord, this is not meant for you. And besides that, by your taking once the chip rice that he brought you, I'm obliged to live in his house for some lifetimes. And if you eat any more, I'll never be able to get back here. So the Brahmin didn't think anything of it. And then next morning, he left. Krishna, he didn't ask Krishna for anything. And Krishna didn't give him anything. You don't ask, you don't get, apparently. If you go on book distribution, you give someone a book, and you don't ask for a donation, they're not going to give you a donation. So he didn't ask, so he didn't get anything. He said, yes, Krishna didn't give me anything. He said, but because I'm just a poor Brahmin, why should he give me anything? He knows that if he gave me anything, then I would become puffed up. So in order to save me from my pride of having material possessions, Krishna gave me absolutely nothing. But Krishna is so kind that he treated me like a real Brahmin, although I'm actually not really a Brahmin. But still, he put me on his own bedstead, and the goddess of fortune fanned me and offered arti to me. And Krishna fed me with his own hands and washed my feet. He said, actually, Krishna is so kind. Just because I'm supposedly a Brahmin, Krishna is so dear to the Brahmins. Or the Brahmins are so dear to Krishna. And then he got to the place where he thought was his house, and he saw these big palaces. And he said, well, maybe I took a little wrong turn. I don't remember these houses here, these palaces here before. And then he saw someone that looked like his wife, but more like a demigoddess, come to greet him with a big band of musicians. So what's this? So then his wife bowed down before him, and he was completely shocked. You know, what happened? Did you get a job or something? You worked overtime. No. It happened overnight. So then he got into his palace, and then his body itself turned into a very beautiful demigod-like body. So Jaya say that if he had a demigod-like body when he got to his palace, then his wife wouldn't recognize him. When she saw the skinny Brahmin, she, oh, that's my husband, all right. And then he saw his house had been transformed into a palace greater than the opulence of Indra, the king of heaven, with bedstays made of foam, the sheets were like foam, the pillowcase were like, I guess the pillowcase, were soft as foam, the sheets were like silken, and the floor was made out of emeralds. The whole palace was quite opulent. And even the servants there, they looked like demigods and demigoddesses. So he thought, well, how did this happen? And he thought, it must be my friend Krishna. He must have done this. That offered him an insignificant amount of chip rice, and in return, he bestowed upon me this fabulous wealth. So did he get puffed up and say, all right, now we got it. Now we can enjoy clubdiments, sabji, halva, pakoras, sandesh, and kachoris and samosas. No, he lived in that way, thinking everything to be the mercy of Krishna, and he never became attached to it. He simply lived as if everything was Krishna's mercy or Krishna's prasad. Now, why did Krishna do that? Because Krishna did not want Sudama to become too detached. Too much detachment leads to aversion. But we should not be either averse nor attached to the material energy. We should simply accept what's given to us. Yadrichaya avashantu sto dvanvati tone matsaraha samaksidaval siddhal cha kripapinana bhajite. One who is satisfied with gains which comes of its own accord. Free from duality and does not envy, who is satisfied both with success and failure, is never entangled although performing action. So our problem is that we're always looking forward to the future. Because whenever we think about the past, it wasn't quite the way I wanted it to be. I got a 99 on the test, and if I can go back in my time machine, I could take the test over and get 100. And then my life will become nearly perfect. So everyone is always in a constant state of lamentation. Oh, the past is not the way I wanted it to be. And the future is always something what we're thinking, well, how can we reach perfection in the material world? Modern perfection is, don't do anything and just enjoy sense gratification. I remember when I was 60 years ago, I saw a movie. It was the first James Bond movies. You heard of James Bond? 007. Maybe it's 000. No, 7. Anyhow, they show the perfection of life. He was on this huge bed with his girlfriend, and the alarm clock rang. And as soon as the alarm clock rang, the bed tilted, and both him and his girlfriend, they slid off the bed into a swimming pool to wake up. And then the machine took them out of the swimming pool and dried them off. And then the machine transferred them to the dining room where they were fed their breakfast. They didn't have to do anything. The machines did everything, except to digest the food. Since they didn't do anything, they probably couldn't digest anything. In any case, this is seen as the perfection of life. One day you just become a mouth. Your body withers away, the only thing left is the mouth. You spend the whole day eating. Machine comes, moves your teeth back and forth. And you just spend the whole day eating. So this is, people are thinking this is perfection of life. And of course, you know, maybe they transfer you after 8 hours of eating, they transfer you to bed so you can sleep. But this is not actually existence. Yehi samsparshita bhoga dukha yone evite adyantavante konteya nateshu ramate buddha. That an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the senses with their objects. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise does not delight in them. So everyone is thinking, I can't wait. Prasadam, it's practically 20 minutes. Then the whole world will make sense again. All this philosophy will reach its culmination. So everyone is thinking like that. They're living between meals. Or in French, the first French phrase I learned was, vivir par, manger pour vivir, you know, vivere pour manger. Pour manger. Manger pour vivere. Vivre. So, eat to live. Ni vivere pour manger. Not live to eat. In other words, eat to live, not live to eat. Purpose of life is not eating, or sleeping, or mating, or defending. But in the absence of Krishna consciousness, we have nothing else to do. Therefore, in the previous verse, Krishna says, Bhayas Pasheva Satatma Vindeyatmini Yatsukam Si Sa Brahma Yoga Yuktatma Sukam Akshayam Ashnute. Such a person is situated in trance, or is not attracted to material sense objects or material sense gratification, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure from within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he concentrates on the Supreme. So this is our only hope, to learn how to concentrate on the Supreme. In other words, unless we can concentrate on Krishna in the spirit of service and devotion, then we can't experience Krishna consciousness. And if we don't experience Krishna consciousness, the only thing left is material consciousness. We have to look for happiness somewhere. If we don't experience it in Krishna consciousness, then we have to experience it in material life. There's no other way. And of course, if we trace the verse back, it's not that we say, all right, today I think I'll just absorb my mind in Krishna and I'll give up eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Not possible. Just like there was one devotee, he decided that since the object of Krishna consciousness is to always remember Krishna and never forget him, therefore, he decided to take a harmonica stand. You know harmonica stand? What that is? Do you know? Either you know or not. Yes, yeah, this thing that goes around here. So you harmonica, and there's a stand so you can put it around your ears and you can play it while you're playing on your guitar. Or something. What's that? He played, yeah, he did it. So he decided to take the harmonica stand and put the holy name, the Maha Mantra around it. That way he'd always see the Maha Mantra wherever he looked. And Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So he could see Krishna everywhere. Unfortunately, he couldn't see anything else. So he was chanting his japa, looking at the holy name the whole day, and then he got a little bored, so he went outside and started to circumambulate around the temple, and then he decided to then some weeks later, he was circumambulating around the blocks, some blocks away, and then one day he disappeared. Maybe somewhere else, you know, some other country circumambulating, I don't know. In any case, artificially trying to always remember Krishna and never forget him is difficult, impossible. Therefore, there's a whole thing before those verses where Krishna explains, for instance, that, as I read the verse yesterday, I gave a class yesterday. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmanigavi Hastane Ihaivatera Jita Sarago. To be able to see everyone and everything equally, be a servant of everyone. If we don't become servant of everyone appropriately, then we'll forget Krishna. If we see that someone or something is apart from Krishna, that means we've forgotten Krishna. So we look at someone or something and we think, well, we don't remember Krishna, then we're a Maya. And normally we'll think, oh, this person is useless, he won't help my sense gratification. Or this person is very nice, they can help me enjoy my senses. And that way one will simply be in the illusory energy. although we may change our address or even our address, but we still may be in the illusory energy. And before that, Krishna says, tad buddhyas, tad atmanas, tad nishtas, tad purayana. Fully engaged, the intelligence, we're hearing the class to engage our intelligence, our mind, our senses, our faith, our refuge, all in the Supreme. So in order to see everyone equally, we have to engage everything in Krishna's service. We have to know what Krishna's service is also. And the verse before that, Gyanena tutada yanam yeshanashtam atmana, when we hear about Krishna and understand things properly, then we can understand we should engage ourselves in His service, and our service is to serve every living entity in loving exchanges appropriately. Then the result will be that we'll become equi-minded and we'll be able to not be disturbed when we obtain something pleasant or hankering for something pleasant. We'll become self-realized, self-controlled, undisturbed, and constantly thinking about Krishna. Then we can actually enjoy Krishna from within, fully. Other than that, if we don't follow the process and we think, well, somehow or another I'm going to become Krishna conscious by some miracle, the good fairy will catch me in the street one day and say, oh, you're so nice. Poom! Ah! And we'll be in ecstasy from then on. No, there's a process. We learn the process. When we apply it in our lives, and gradually Krishna will be merciful to us. He sees we're actually interested in trying to obtain Him. And if we don't bother finding out what the process is, then we can't follow it. And if we don't follow it, we won't get Krishna's full mercy. If we don't get Krishna's full mercy, then we'll be hankering after material things. And even if we hanker after material things, we're simply going to get the same results we would have gotten if we didn't hanker or lament. We're just wasting our time, but we think we're going to get something that we want, and we're afraid of losing something that we don't want to lose, and therefore we think we're the controllers. Well, Krishna is the controller, and if we leave it up to Him, then He'll take care of us. We'll get what we need, and at the same time we'll become Krishna conscious. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class. I had a question about when you were saying we shouldn't kind of over-endeavor, we should just accept what we get. Like Sadama, how he accepted being poor and then accepted being rich. But sometimes we, in this material world, we have to get kind of an occupation. How to draw that fine line between over-endeavoring and just working to maintain yourself? Is it 9 to 5 and 9 to 5:30 is too much? Or...
Well, I have to chant 16 rounds at least, study Prabhupada's books, do a little service, that's it. Stane sita shuti kitam tanavang manobir. Krishna says stay in whatever position you have, but at the same time hear from the scripture, hear Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and engage the body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. So Krishna doesn't say give up your occupation, perform it, but at the same time don't forget about your spiritual duties also. So while we're engaged in our material occupations, at the same time, we should have a sense of Krishna consciousness. Anything else?
I have one question.
Okay. Hopefully I have one answer.
Shri Maharaj, I have this silly question.
Silly question?
Yeah, it's a silly because...
Maybe you have an intelligent question too.
Oh yeah, maybe it's intelligent.
It's a
funny question because sometimes devotees around you, they're saying like, oh, you're so Krishna conscious, you're so in bliss, but you don't feel it, so... What is their opinion about this, or should be how we should accept this? You know, like they say, like you're so nice devotee, or you.
They're telling you that you're such a nice devotee.
Yeah, sometimes I can hear these kind of things, but wow. I think like, well, what did I... But this is very common because people like telling nice things to you, and they say like, you're such a nice water, or you cook so nice.
Well, you should become a GBC. You won't have to worry about those things.
But what is the value of their opinion? Or they say like, you, the prasadam is so nice, you're so devoted to Krishna, or he's accepting everything. How should we...
Well, we should know we're not the doer. Whatever we're able to accomplish is by the mercy of Krishna's devotees and Krishna. We're simply 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary's size, and by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, we're able to do some service. So it's actually Krishna doing the service, not us. So if they're praising Krishna, praising what we're doing, then we should know it's Krishna is actually doing it. The praise actually goes to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees, not to us. We're simply willing to become Krishna's instrument, that's all. But the actual activities carried out by Krishna's internal energy.
Means if you're skilled in some things that you're doing, that Krishna likes you more than somebody else who's not skilled.
No. Well, Krishna may like you, he may not like you. Generally, Krishna likes everyone. But Krishna is the ability of man, according to Bhagavad Gita. He's the one who's doing it. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karamani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartahamiti manyate. Bewildered by the three modes of material nature, the ignorant soul thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by the modes of nature. But if we're doing devotional activities, they're carried out by the spiritual nature. We're simply desiring, and Krishna fulfills he understands our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it, and then he arranges either the material nature or the spiritual energy to carry out the activities. All we're doing is desiring. And if we have a proper desire, it's only because we have the association of devotees who are inspiring us to take up the proper desire. And therefore, when we accept the proper desires, then Krishna winds up utilizing his instrument in his service. But the credit goes to Krishna and his devotees, not to us.
Hare Krishna, it makes sense. Thank you.
Good. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandaraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.